pick a window. This is the Defenestrate Media Network.
Oh, wow. I don't know about the costume, but that's some set of wheels.
Hi, I'm Marv Wolfman, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
3, 2. You're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast, and I am your host, the radioactive professor of all things comic book, J.C. Carter. Joining me today on the show, my super friends. In the north, our punk pixie, Miss Jocelyn Christensen.
Hi, guys.
And on the bridge of his own private enterprise, our very own James Tiberius Batman, Laird Jeff Bell.
What does God need with an Easter bunny?
I mean, I don't know.
Excuse me. What does God need with an Easter bunny? Is that just it? God, I mean, is it?
God zaps you in the chest with a lightning bolt. That's all. Yeah.
I'm the Easter bunny, bitch.
I literally have no idea what you are referencing right now. I'm so lost.
The end of Star Trek V, when Kirk is talking to God and asking why God wants his starship. What does God need with a starship?
Well, I'm in the middle of a black hole. I don't know how to get out.
Come on, Jim. You don't meet the Almighty and ask to see his ID.
Lord. Is that what you're going to be watching tonight? Like, is this an annual Easter tradition now?
No, but I'm Admiral James Tiberius Batman Bell.
I know, but so I'm just saying that maybe you should watch that tonight now.
You know what? I think I may be the only person in the world that actually loves that movie. I love that movie. It is bad on several levels, but as I have said to people many times before, I've read the script, the original script they were going to shoot, and it would have been one of the best ones. But then they took away half his money after they'd started shooting, and he'd spent most of that half before he got to the big special effects-laden ending he needed to have, and instead he had like $100,000. And you know what? For $100,000, that's a hell of an ending.
All right, fair. I'll have to rewatch it with open eyes.
Shatner got screwed is what happened. You know, don't get me wrong. There's still narcissism and hubris throughout the script. Make no mistake. But
I'm sure,
you know, but yeah, the original shooting script was way better than what they ended up shooting.
Huh?
It's very frustrating.
Did not know that. I bet. Yeah. I bet it was fun.
There's a lot of there's quite a few cringy moments all the way through. Yeah. And when you hold it up to Star Trek IV and Star Trek VI, it's like, this is a weird meat in this sandwich. I don't know what this is.
Yep.
Because 4 and 6 were just dynamite, you know, just amazing. And they had problems, you know, they had, you know, let's go to warp in an atmosphere.
I can't believe I kissed you.
Yeah.
Must have been your lifelong goal.
That's the best line ever. That's the best Shatner line ever. That must have been your life's ambition.
Lord.
Most meta thing since, you know, until we had Nicolas Cage play himself in a movie. That was the most meta moment in any film. How's your week been, guys?
Busy. Oh my gosh, my week was so busy. We had our annual fundraiser for my job, our art and soup fundraiser. So I did a night of volunteering down there, and that's always fun and enjoyable and just a good time. But then you guys, my oldest kid is not a teenager anymore as of today, as of day of recording.
20 years old?
20 years old.
An Easter miracle.
20-year-old. It is an Easter miracle that we survived this long.
20 years.
Yeah. Yeah. My kiddo is 20 today, so I'm just a happy mama. How about you guys? How's your week?
It's an interesting year. It's an interesting year, and yet it's still the worst year because you still have a year to wait.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Got a year to go before you can go to a bar or something. Yeah.
Yep. So anyways, yeah. So that, I mean, really sums up my week.
Yeah.
How about you, Jeff? How's your week?
So, okay.
It was okay. I'll take it. I'll take okay over how I think your weeks have been going lately. So.
We'll talk about my home life more on I Told You So,
absolutely.
Which is still looking for a consistent day to drop on. And we're supposed to drop on Fridays, but, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I'm busy working. So we're working on that. But no, we've had some setbacks, some fallbacks, and then still working on the fundraiser. Got that for another week or so. If you could pop over to thecomicbookpodcast.com and help us out there. You have no idea just how badly we need this, and just how fucking cool shit will be if we can pull it off. That's all. So we're looking for that. We're looking for help there. We're looking for sponsors. We're looking for people that want to advertise, which you can find on thecomicbookpodcast.com. Little thing says advertise with us. You can click on it. I think it's a bargain. I'm told my prices are too low. Maybe that's something you want to hear. But go over and take a look. Give us a shot. Help us out. Watch what we can become when you unbind our wings. Unbind me, listener. Unbind
Release
me.
Release me.
Yeah. Let me fly. 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 I am the wind beneath my wings. Something like that. I don't remember how that goes.
Something like that.
Yeah,
I'll agree.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. But that's it. No, it's just been a week of some good stuff and more bad stuff and just trying to make my... But I did. I made it back to work. Oh, let's cover that real quick.
Okay.
We didn't record last weekend because I was doing some kidney stone stuff. I am feeling better. It was rough. Waiting for it to pass. It's rougher when it passes.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of an insult to what you've already been through the week prior after it passes and you have to pee. The whole experience is like just 3 weeks of just utter bullshit. And the fact that Tiffany has to go through this almost every fucking day blows my mind. You know, I cannot be weak in the face of the bravery she shows with chronic kidney stones. So, you know, I did my best to tough it out, but I still ended up taking a couple of days off work, which I have not done in years. I haven't taken a sick day with the exception of COVID because we had to. But yeah, it's been years and it was weird. And I will give credit where credit is due. It was Charles' idea. Yeah. He's like, you got a kidney stone? I'm like, yeah. He's like, go home. Braxton's there. He'll take care of the shop. I was like, okay. And then later that day, he's like, I'll cover your shift tomorrow. I was like, okay. All right. That's fucking badass. Thanks, boss.
Yeah.
I think I told him I was going to cry.
Aww.
You know, and then Thursday, he's like, why don't I just take your shift tomorrow? And I'm like, holy shit. This is fucking amazing. So he did. He covered me there, and I did a half a shift on Saturday. And was just like, nope, too early. Nope. Went back home and then got back Tuesday, and I'm feeling more myself. It still hurts. Everything still hurts, but,
right.
You know, I'm pretty sure I've got another stone just locked up and ready to move through. So this has been an insult to injury kind of week.
And when I went out on last Friday, when I went in, there's Charles. I said, what are you doing standing here like you own the place?
Well played.
Then we chatted, and I bought comics and hung out and chatted with Charles instead of Jeff, which seemed odd. But, you know, I like Charles, so I enjoyed Charles.
As do I.
Yeah.
But, yeah, if you guys remember, I have a Dr. Seuss joke, but I can't tell it until we're behind the firewall over at Patreon.
Sounds good.
So don't
all
let me
right.
forget. I'm pretty sure the joke is a HIPAA violation. That's all I'm saying. You're supposed to have customer guy, comic book guy confidentiality. I'm pretty sure that's covered under clergy rules, right?
Right.
Something like that. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a sacred trust, like a bartender. You just don't. Yeah.
All right. Behind the paywall, we will hear it.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. How was your week?
Mine.
Yeah.
Oh, let's see. I think it was last weekend. The boy, Angus, moved out.
Boo.
So next step in adulthood, he's moved in with his partner, and that was it. I was like, oh, okay. Boy, you don't think about it until they're gone, and then you're like, you know, damn, missed this kid already.
Yeah, huh? It's weird. Yeah.
It's very weird. And yeah, I mean, Michelle's going through it a lot worse than I probably am, but I was still like, when we saw him on Tuesday, we took him to the movies. You know, I hugged him and I said, "Hey, your mom's not the only one missing you. Just remember that."
Yeah,
I'm just too manly to show it.
That's right. Well, I'm trying to give him his freedom and everything.
Well, I mean, there is a weird balance between wishing them well on their journey, you know, and wishing they'd fucking stay.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that's really it. So.
Yeah, even though mine's 20, I don't have to address that yet. So.
Yeah, I don't really have the space for a multi-generational house. You know, if I lived at Downton Abbey, it'd be like, why are you moving? But here it's like, yeah, no, it's obviously, yeah, you need to get out on your own for a while. And then I found out, so everybody probably remembers I got laid off back in February. Mm-hmm. First week of March, I get a call from my person at my contracting agency who said, so you want to work? I said, well, legally, I can't say no. What's the gig? And she said, well, you just be going back to work for them again. It's a 30-day extension to your contract. I said, okay. So I went back on the 7th of March, thought I would be working until the 6th of April, only to find out that they'd only given me 134 hours. So last week I wound up working 2 days and a 6-hour day, and next week I'll work only 2 days. Just to provide coverage for everybody. And then I'm done. Because I hear from the new contracting agency, I demanded that they talk to me. And they said, yeah, we don't have an open slot for you. So after 10 years and building that OSHA, I'll finally say who I worked for, OSHA website, up to what it is today, that's it. See you later. Because that's what our world is like now, yeah. And it just sucks. So now I got to find new work. And I thought I'd found something. God damn, they were good. I'm so pissed off at how good they were at this grift. It was such a good, easy interview. The offer letter I got was. Well, let's be honest. It was shocking how good the offer was. They lowballed me in one area, which made me think, which kind of gave me that, okay, this is what it's going to be. But then,
well, that's like, how you think it's real. It's
yeah,
like
exactly.
If everything was perfect, you'd be like, nah, this is wrong. But if like
yeah,
everything's
no, if they
good,
were offering me like $100 an hour or something, you'd be like, oh, fuck this.
Yeah, we're gonna fuck you over here, and you're like, oh, well, that sounds like a company.
Yeah, that sounds like a normal company. But then they offered like one of them was 30 days of PTO. I was like, what is this, a European company? What the fuck is this? So I was like, but I didn't know, you know, they didn't tell me how many hours at first. And then they said, oh, no, you'd be working 40 hours a week. I was like, really? Interesting. OK, yeah, let's start moving forward with this. But I noticed that the letter was wrong, like the job description. I said, hey, I think you put the job description in here. And I started thinking, they must be a fly-by-night company or something. They just don't know how to put all this shit together. No, no, they were doing it all with AI, and it was a phishing scam.
Oh.
I caught it in time. Let's just put it that way. I caught it in time. There's one thing I'm going to have to do to protect myself, but I caught it in time.
I never thought about a job interview scenario being a phishing scam, ever.
It is the lowest motherfucking thing. Pond scum is at a higher level than these motherfuckers, in my opinion.
Oh yeah.
When you're suddenly desperate for work and you're in your very vulnerable place, you know, you are looking at no income coming in, right, you know, immediately, and they're offering something this good, or, and it was like a dollar more an hour than what I'm currently making. So that was where I was like, okay, so you lowballed me there. But it was that, it's just, God damn. I spent the weekend fairly pissed off, and I was getting tattooed too. So it was, the pain helped. It was, people talk about the needle therapy. I was angry at the pain too, from the, you know, that, and that helped kind of deal with my anger over getting fished.
Oh, for sure.
But I caught it early only because OSHA puts us through training after training after training every year for phishing and other online scams. Hell, they pulled one on us a few months ago where I got an email, and it's an email like you get every few months. And it was like, we're having a problem with this. Click here to correct this. And it was just a link. So I clicked it, not thinking. Even though there's a big red thing at the top saying, this is coming from outside the agency.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I clicked it and they said, you've fallen for a phishing scam. You've got to go through training again. I was like, fuck. And it was all because they, you know, they caught me on a stressed out day and did something they do all the fucking time, which is, oh, we're having a problem with this. Make sure you update your username or whatever. And mm-hmm. It was like all of a sudden, boom. Oh, fuck. I can't believe I fell for that. So I had to take a phishing training again. So, you know, having that fresh in my head, I was like, I think this is a scam. Let's go back over all this stuff they've sent me that I haven't been paying that close of attention to. Yep, that's, yep, yep, yep. Fish, 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 fish. Yep, there's all the hooks. I see them. Yep. So, fun week for me, guys.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. That sucks. Mm-hmm. Holy crap.
Yep. I was like, God damn. That's a rule of three right there. Three shitty things. My kid moving out. Not that that's... I'm happy for him.
That's shitty in a very specific feeling way.
Emotionally shitty for me. And then losing my job after 10 years, you know, absolutely been told, nope, you're not coming back. And then and then getting fished. It's like, oh. Motherfucker. Yeah. Anyway. On that happy note, let's go to some more unhappy notes with the news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice...
I don't know why this headline doesn't have two words in it. Iron Eagle. Louis Gossett Jr., first black guy to win the Best Supporting Actor Oscar, has passed away at the age of 87. This time, his cousin told the press that he died, not someone that works for him, unless his cousin's his manager, and I just missed it.
No, his cousin's actually another actor. Yeah, as an actor as well. So yeah, he's like, well, I'll tell everybody.
Yeah, Louis Gossett Jr. always thought of his early career as a reverse Cinderella story, with success finding him from an early age, propelling him forward toward his Academy Award for An Officer and a Gentleman. I got nowhere to go! Broke through the small screen as Fiddler in a 1977 miniseries, Roots.
Mm-hmm.
Which, this article says, depicted the atrocities of slavery. I feel the AP could have used more words there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One or two.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, Enemy Mine, Iron Eagle,
oh,
terrible Top Gun ripoff.
It was, but it was such a compelling story.
Well, he was great.
At the time it came out, I liked its story more than I liked Top Gun's story.
Really?
I really did. Yeah.
Okay.
I liked that the kid was he wasn't super arrogant about it. He was more or less saying, they're not going to save my dad. I need to save my dad. And he made that happen. And it was wonderful, you know, this whole thing. And I fucking love that movie so much more. And yet I can give it to Top Gun that at least they used real airplanes and real, you know, things like that. And this looked cheap, and all the flying sequences look cheap compared to Top Gun. And that's the only sad part for it, because everything else was awesome, fucking awesome to me. Let me tell you, his drill sergeant character in Officer and a Gentleman, scariest drill sergeant we ever saw on TV in the movies until Stanley Kubrick showed us an actual drill sergeant screaming at us with Arlie Ermey as D.I. Hartman in Full Metal Jacket. But he was so good in that role and definitely deserved the supporting actor Oscar. But I mean, this article from the AP, if you dive into it a little bit further, there's a moment where he talks about what happened when he first came to Hollywood. You know, he was flown out to stay in Hollywood for, you know, while they shot something or worked with him on something. And yeah, he rented a car and got pulled over within
minutes.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
The officer ordered him, like, he had to sit there and wait until the officer called the rental agency to make sure he actually should be in the car. And then he made him put the top up, and he said he got pulled over like 5 more times or more, I guess, but by different cops all the way, you know, just trying to drive back to his fucking hotel. And the fact that he was booked into the Beverly Hills Hotel, they were like, yeah, no, they weren't letting him. Yeah. 8 sheriff's officers. And he had to lean against the car and made him open the trunk and call the car rental agency and all this other shit. It was like, and that was 1968. So yeah, he suffered through it. Yeah.
Months after former Marvel actor Jonathan Majors was found guilty of assault of his ex-girlfriend, she's decided to sue him over accusations that he physically and verbally abused her. I don't think it's going to be hard for her to prove this one, seeing as how he's already been found guilty of it. This is a civil suit. Filed by Grace Jabari on Tuesday in New York federal court, accuses Majors of battery, assault, intentional infliction of emotional distress, malicious prosecution, and defamation. The case stems from a, quote, pattern of pervasive domestic abuse that began in 2021 and continued through 2023. Well, you kind of got it coming, buddy.
Yep. Hope she gets a lot of money from it.
Yep.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We're just not cool. Can't just run around beating up your partner.
Sometimes they'll beat the criminal case, and then turn around and lose the civil suit. Like O.J. Simpson beat the criminal case against him for murder, but then he lost the civil suit.
Yep.
From both her family and the other guy's family, basically sued him for.
See, basically, yeah, the criminal case took away his career. Mm-hmm. She's going to take away his money.
Exactly.
Speaking of somebody who ought to have their money taken away, it looks like Ed Piskor, the cartoonist behind Hip Hop Family Tree, X Men Grand Design, and more recently, what is it, Red Room? Has been accused on social media by multiple women of grooming and other forms of misconduct. The accusations began this past weekend when a young female presenting cartoonist, whose name is not being published in this article, shared screenshots of DMs with Piskor. The screenshots showed dated DM conversations with him that took place in 2020 when the cartoonist was just 17 and Piskor was 38. Based on the screenshots, Piskor was aware of her then age, calls the cartoonist a naughty girl, and said she'd, quote, be a good partner in crime, end quote, before asking, quote, you're not a snitch, are you, end quote. Well, yes. Took a little while. He also sends her a photograph of a room in his house saying, you could crash here if you ever wander into my side of the state for a few days. They both live in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a young woman says, quote, "This is not a cancellation of Ed Piskor, that other cartoonists have been aware of Piskor's behavior for a long time, and that she posted the screenshots in an attempt to warn other young cartoonists about his behavior and an apparent pattern of attempted grooming." Well, it certainly was.
It's exactly what it is.
Yep.
It's 100% grooming. And, yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about, I really liked Hip Hop Family Tree when I read it.
Yep.
And it was only pieces of it because it was put out for Free Comic Book Day, but I really liked it. I was like, that's really compelling. And now I'm like, well, I guess I won't be reading the whole thing. Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Ew.
Not appropriate, dude. You're 40.
Stop being gross, guys. Just stop.
Yeah.
I mean, it was one thing with, what's his name? From England. Geez, Warren? Was it Warren Police? Or somebody like that. Where all the women were accusing him of you know, misconduct and everything. But in reality, everybody was an adult. He always made sure they were at least an adult. This one, I'm like, dude.
Yeah, just because they're adults doesn't make it less gross.
No, it's still, still gross. Gross if I'm it's unwanted. It's still gross. It's still gross. But yeah. Yeah. He was, ooh. This is not only gross, it's also illegal. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. The misconduct allegations are not the first time Piskor has been the center of controversy. In 2022, a variant cover that referenced Mao's for his series Red Room Trigger Warnings was criticized for mocking the Holocaust. The cover was drawn by Rugg. Piskor has also been criticized for using racial slurs, including the N-word, in the past. At the same time, he has an award-winning body of work that's drawn a lot of acclaim. Over the years, he cultivated a bad boy persona that isn't going to be much use in defending his actions.
Nope.
The Beat reached out to both Piskor and Rugg for comment. The young woman who initially posted the DMs has declined to comment on what she's posted, beyond what she's posted. So, all right. Well, here you go, everybody. Cheech and Chong are coming to Call of Duty. Because why not?
Is that exciting?
No. It's not. I mean, even if
it is to people who play Call of Duty.
I just don't want to see Cheech nor Chong machine gunning people. That's not their vibe.
Maybe that's not what they're doing, because I think the article said it's not clear what their role is yet.
Nah, why would you have a skin you're not going to shoot? That's all I'm saying. They'll be shooting. And even if they're not, the PC port's going to make them do it anyway. So it's going to happen. It's going to be weird.
Driving into battle? Far out, man. Let's do it, man.
Dave's not here, man.
I want to know if Tommy and Cheech are going to actually lend their voices to it, you know?
I hope so.
Or if they're just going to be skins, because then whatever. But, I mean, if they actually put their voices in it, that'd be funny.
That would be funny.
I like this part of the article. It's like, I know some will get a kick out of this, giggle about the weed content, not think much more about it, and that's fine. I just keep getting sadder and sadder as I watch all of pop culture and entertainment slowly consume itself, and we get closer and closer to a future where everything is one big gray blob owned by Warner Brothers, Disney, Fox, Universal, Monsanto, Sony, Tencent, Apple, Microsoft. Sure, it's silly that I can watch Ariana Grande fight Goku and Michael Myers in Fortnite, but watching all art get chopped up and chunked into the never-ending maw that is the metaverse makes me really, really sad, man. I miss when stuff was distinct and unique. I don't disagree.
I also do not disagree with that.
All right.
Cannot.
All right, gang, that's it for the news.
We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're heading to Tinseltown.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, How would you recognize them? Would you notice a 16-year-old boy who got his first job?
Not for extra spending money, but to help feed his little sisters?
Or a mother who's in between jobs and
sometimes goes to bed hungry so her kids can have dinner?
I am the one in eight Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Elena Huffman, Abaddon on Supernatural, and you are listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Tell me.
There is nothing wrong with your television. Do not attempt to adjust the picture.
What have you guys been watching out of Tinseltown this week? Joss?
Oh my gosh, you guys. I do not know if this was a great decision or a terrible decision, but I watched Wonder Woman 1984 again.
Fair.
And it's still way up there when it comes to the DC movies.
Oh yeah, it's better.
So
better than most of them.
I mean, if you take it for the kitschy 80s loving movie that it is, the ridiculous storyline, I mean, you just really have to run with it. And it was delightful. I enjoyed it. Gal Gadot is so wonderful as Wonder Woman. I'm very sad that they are recasting and canceled Patty Jenkins' third movie, because I would have liked to have seen what she did.
Yep.
So, and then I started...
Is it another way to bring back Steve Trevor? I don't know.
Right. I mean, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe we could have gone... I don't know. Who knows? But I finished watching Griselda with my mother, my Friday night date show. That was really an intriguing look at 1980s Miami's cocaine scene. With Sofia Vergara. So that was fun in weird ways. And then I started the new Guy Ritchie
the TV
Netflix
show?
Series. The TV show,
oh,
The Gentleman.
Oh, I'm meaning to start that. Yeah.
Yeah. I watched that. I didn't know what I was getting into when I started it. It just looked, I watched like the trailer and I was like, that looks good. And oh my God, I'm all in. So I'm going to be trying to binge through that pretty quick, like here. What about you, Jeff? What did you watch this week?
Tig Notaro has a new stand-up special, I believe, on Prime that literally had me feeling like I'd been doing sit-ups when I was done watching it.
Oh.
Funny stuff.
It's so funny.
Yeah. Watched the old Roadhouse movie again. I'm going to blame this one on... I ate too much gummy and could not pick. I spent 20 minutes trying to find something, and finally this was what was settled on, and I watched the whole thing. I had other shit to do.
Now that you say that, I did watch the new Roadhouse movie as well.
Which I loved. I thought it was really great.
It was good.
Yeah, not a remake. Not a remake as much as just a loving homage.
Yeah.
I did. I enjoyed it. So I think that's why we watched Old Roadhouse. And now that I watched Old Roadhouse, I want to watch New Roadhouse again.
There you go. Do the comparison.
On Netflix, Shirley. Wonderful movie about Shirley Chisholm.
I want to watch that. It looks so good.
So good.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed it. And of course, that was one Tiffany made me watch. Also on Netflix, The Three Body Problem, based on a series of books about an alien race that's going to invade, but because they have sublight travel, it's going to take 400 years to get here. In the meantime, they want to make sure the planet's empty when they get here, and so things start going nuts. They start attacking us by fucking up physics.
Rude. Don't do that.
I know. It's nuts. And it's like, I don't understand half of what these guys are saying, but it's scaring the shit out of me. It's been good so far, but boy, it is, as I believe they would call it, hard sci-fi.
Okay.
But I like that. And then, of course, over on dropout.tv, it's a game changer. I cannot get enough of this whole thing. Between this... Breaking news. I don't know if you guys have heard of breaking news. That's when they have to read news headlines that the comedy writers have put together. They've never seen it before, and they're not allowed to smile or laugh. I mean, like I said, half the goddamn thing is improv games.
Love it.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I just cannot get enough of it. So what about you, sir?
Let's see. We started the week watching Madam Web. Watched the Madam Web. I liked it. It wasn't...
Was that on the DVR?
Like, oh, wow, this is... What's that?
Is that on the DVR?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. How's the copy?
Yeah. Good.
Oh.
It's excellent. It's an excellent copy.
Oh, good.
Yeah, an excellent copy. No, it was a really good movie. At least, I mean, it's nothing I'm going to write. It's nothing to write home about. I put it on the same level as, say, Venom. It's a good movie.
Venom was all right, yeah.
Yeah, there's an ending shot that I thought was super cheesy, but otherwise, it was. I like the idea of it, and I like what they would like to have done with it. I know it won't happen now because it didn't make any money, but it's one of those that if they could have done a sequel, I see where they would have gone with it. Mm. The three girls were very cool in it. And yeah, overall it was a fun movie, in my opinion. It was a fun movie. And Dakota Johnson, could recite the phone book on film, and I would find it, and she could make it compelling.
That's all right.
She's very talented. I really like Dakota Johnson. And in fact, it's funny because you read through some of the little Rotten Tomato blurbs of those who splatted it, and a lot of the splats were like, this movie is terrible, except for Dakota Johnson. You know? Dakota Johnson had to carry this terrible movie, or, you know, all these little things. And the ones who are certified fresh are still like, it's not that great of a movie, but Dakota Johnson really carries it. And I'm like, not only did she carry it, I didn't think it was that bad of a movie. And then we do see the true origin of the greatest superhero from Marvel Comics.
Thor?
Period.
Daredevil's not in this.
No. But we get to see the true origin in, you know, because it takes place in the past. This whole story is, you know, well, let's just say 15 years ago. So, yeah. I didn't know Ben Parker was an ambulance was a CMT, but apparently in this universe he is. So I'm going to give it to him. Yeah. this is before he married that lovely lady May. But he did talk about how in like the first scene, he talks about how he had a date. He doesn't name her name, but he had a date, and he was like, and she's like, oh, is this what the one? He goes, well, maybe. And he's played by Adam. I'm trying to remember his last name from Parks and Rec.
Scott.
Adam Scott. He's played by Adam Scott, and it's really good. But yeah, it's Ben Parker, as in Uncle Ben. Yeah. So yeah, it takes knocks things out of time and stuff. But I didn't care. I was having fun. So it's a fun movie. Nice. Also fun. We saw Ghostbusters: Frozen Empire.
Damn, I want to see that so bad.
Went to the Tuesday night movie to see that one over at the where I can see $5 movies on Tuesdays, and had a great time. I mean. Yeah, is it as good as the first movie? No. Is it as good as the last, you know, the Ghostbusters, the last one they did? No. But it's still better than
Madam Web.
Well, I'd say it's on par with Madam Web. It's still better than the second Ghostbusters movie,
Secret of the Ooze.
Yeah, and that one's okay. That one's okay. That second Ghostbusters movie was fine, but this one has kind of that kind of stuff. But at the same time, you get to see everybody back. You know, that's still alive. You get to see basically both casts working together. We kind of hoped there'd be a three cast mix, that somehow they'd find a way to get the ladies in.
That would have been nice. Thing.
That would have been cool, but they didn't make that happen. Because it would have been really funny if they, you know, if the ladies show up and they see Bill Murray and they're like, didn't we kill you?
I was say I actually watched that Ghostbusters recently as well.
The 2016 so, Ghostbusters is still one of the best ones.
I love that movie. It's so fun.
Yep.
Anyway.
It's one of the better Ghostbusters movie. And for me, the 2016 Ghostbusters is on par with the original Ghostbusters from 1984.
Nice.
Period. That's it.
So this one's not that good. But,
not that good,
but still delightful suck. And worth still going delightful. To see.
Yep.
Absolutely. I'm excited. I'm going to find time.
I'll admit I was getting a little pissed off at the girl. As she was basically playing a petulant teenager. But then that's just the dad and me getting pissed off at the petulant teenager. So, but yeah, no, it's kind of a fun little film. I'd say it's fun. It's worth seeing. See it on a $5 night or something. It's worth seeing.
All right.
Watch the Daily Show, watched After Midnight. What the fuck? Only 3 episodes of After Midnight this week. What the fuck are you doing? They're going to cancel it. That's all I'm thinking. They're going to cancel it. Because it's on a network. It's not on a cable channel, you know?
Yep.
It's just really pissing me off because I want it to keep going.
I'm loving
it. There are nights it misses, and there are nights that it hits so hard I'm in pain afterwards because I've been laughing so hard.
What was the one this week? The middle one, Tuesdays.
Yeah.
It was fucking hilarious.
With that really weird skinny Canadian comedian with the long hair. I mean, he was just so fucking funny.
Yeah, he was great.
Oh my God. But then the next night I was getting pissed because I was watching her give extra points to a guy I didn't think was funny. I didn't think that guy was funny. And she just kept throwing extra points at him. I'm like, what the fuck? He's not funny. Maybe he must be working in the room, but he's not working over the camera. That's all.
Yeah. No, I'll give you. She gave him too many points.
Yeah.
That was the one when Kyle Kinane was on, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I love fucking Kyle Kinane. He cracks me up. What the fuck did he look like? That was weird.
Yeah.
You're making me want to go find this video now.
Yeah, you should.
Find it after the show.
Yep, worth watching.
Yep. All right, I haven't been watching it, but I'll try.
But I'll end on, I took the plunge, and I've watched the first 3 episodes of X-Men 97.
Oh,
longtime listeners know how I feel about the original X-Men cartoon. So I walked in, you know, having taken some Dramamine, ready to move, ready to go. And I want to say first, if the animation was like this back in 93, I probably wouldn't have had as many problems with the X-Men cartoon as I did. Still got all the, you know, it's like, I don't mind if you do things out of order, but do you have to use exactly the images from the comic and exactly the dialogue from the comic, which only make me in my head sit there rearranging the timeline in my head, putting you in the correct timeline. It's like, no, this happened before this, and this happened after this, and this happened here, and this happened here. And the whole time I'm watching it, I'm thinking of when this actually happened, because this was my era of reading the X-Men is what they're depicting. I didn't think about it in 1980. When was this comic book published? 1985. So this is 1985. The Trial of Magneto, where we first see John Romita Jr.'s big purple costume that he put him in, with the long gloves and everything. Oh my God, I did not know that. I didn't think about that costume being as queer coded as they made it in this animated piece. The gloves were true evening gloves. You know, he's working his hips. He's got some sassy hip movement as he goes. It was pretty cool watching Magneto in that. And of course, my wife's loving his long, beautiful hair. But the third episode, X-Men, the Inferno crossover was a summer event. It was one of those early summer events that would only hit the X-Men comics. And they did Inferno in a single episode. And there's a part of me that got so tired of Inferno when I read it back in the 80s. Yeah, I was like, I'm all for this only lasting one episode. On the other hand, I was like, wow, you only did one episode. And of course, there were a lot of things they cut out. And it's so funny because Morph turns into characters that they have yet to ever introduce in this animated series, and he turns into these characters. Like, I watch him turn into Dark Child, into Ilyana Rasputin, and actually speak in her voice and everything. I was like, yeah, you've never introduced Ilyana that I'm aware of. You've never introduced magic. So, okay, that's funny. That's your way of getting your little Easter egg cameos in without actually having ever bothered to introduce them. Because we only got introduced to Bobby DaCosta in the first episode, which means none of the New Mutants have really been introduced. Yeah. So that was my fun with the X-Men. Still had moments. I'll probably keep watching it just because I'm curious. But it's funny because what worked in 1984 as a costume for Magneto definitely does not look right for 1984. Oh, my God. And correct me if I'm wrong, Joss. I'm pretty sure high-waisted jeans were out of fashion by 1997.
You know, I am the last person to ask about that because I am not a fashion person. However, I think you are correct. I'm pretty sure we were moving more towards low-rise at that
low
point
rise,
in time.
Low-rise, yeah, by 1997. So Jean Grey in her high-waisted pants, I was like, wow, so actually this should be X-Men 87 is my
line. Yeah.
So X-Men 97. I know you got to say 97 because it's supposed to take place, you know, it's supposed to be the it's supposed to, it's hitting right after the end of the last one. So that would have been 96. And so 97 would be the new one. Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, it was so funny because I'm like, yeah, all this is, you're really bringing in all of the stuff from 1984 and 85. And that's not, yeah, that, oh yeah, that's going to look funny. Especially because it was John Romita Jr. who had kind of a way of drawing things that was all very odd. So, yeah. Fun time, so. I mean, it's fun. Whatever. I'm getting a kick out of making fun of it, so.
There you go.
We'll enjoy that. And even the theme song, it's like they jazzed up the theme song a little bit. Like, there's this huge drum. They just drop the beat right at the top, and there's this huge drum piece right at the top. And then you finally get into the na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. And it's not like fingernails on a chalkboard. So, yeah, it's kind of fun.
Ooh, good to know.
All right, let's dive into some Tinseltown news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Star Trek Section 31 has wrapped.
Yes.
Filming. Now it's all over but the special effects. Yeah, first ever original Star Trek movie has wrapped filming. Actor Robert Kaczynski revealed the news on his Instagram, calling the shoot one of the greatest experiences of his life. He goes on to thank the director, Asu Swanmi, and Michelle Yeoh and the rest of the cast, including three actors whose presence in the film had yet to be revealed. Jim Ping from The Expanse, Miku Martinow from Kate, and Augustino Bitter from Ezra. Quick shoot, probably going to be about a 90-minute plus commercials. It was in early in production in late January and is now wrapped filming in mid-March. So that's pretty cool.
Nice.
But yeah, it's got a don't get too excited. As of yet, Star Trek has a very long production tail for post.
True.
It has been revealed, and I mean, this is the next article. I don't know if you were going to touch on it, but it has been revealed, though, that Casey Rohl is in it playing a young Rachel Garrett.
Yeah. Yeah, which you might recall from yesterday's Enterprise from season 3, I believe, of Next Generation.
Season 4, yeah. Season 3 or 4 from Next Gen. The episode where after 3 years or so of negotiators in space, I was like, we're all like, we want a spinoff of this one. This was fun. Picard, that'll be the day, leaps over the console to fire all the photon torpedoes before his ship's destroyed. I mean, it was just so cool. But yeah, Rachel Garrett, she was captain of the Enterprise C, which, if she's a young Rachel Garrett before, of course, she goes on her fated voyage to be killed, that puts this movie in the Lost era, which I'm really intrigued by.
Yeah.
Because we only got like one other We only got one or two other things that really touched on the Lost era. Some stuff from Nemesis, but not a lot. The episode where Picard, you know, Q takes Picard through a thing where he got his artificial heart, and he changes history, and then winds up working in astrometrics as a 50-year-old lieutenant by the, you know, when he's like
long range scan technician.
Exactly. And then there were the two episodes from Voyager involving Tuvok that touched on the Lost era, but usually nothing's been talked about. The Lost era is the time between Star Trek VI and Next Gen. Weird area where everybody was still wearing Monster Maroon, but they stopped wearing the undershirt, the turtlenecks under them and everything. Yeah. That's the Lost era. And we've always wanted a show set in the Lost era. One of the things we were pushing in the early days of the internet was Star Trek Excelsior. And even George Takei was like, oh, I'll do it. I'm happy to come back and do it.
That's one of my favorite Shatner stories, is how he was having a chat with Takei, and Takei's like, I finally got my own ship. And Shatner's like, yeah, but everything happens on your old ship. Don't you want screen time? And he's like, I got my own ship. It's like, whatever, dude. Great, you got your own ship. Meanwhile, 9/10 of the movie's going to happen over here, so we'll catch you around, buddy. Thank you.
Yeah. He was doing it as the flex. I got my own ship. I'm moving up. It's like, your character's moving up. But
yeah. I got all the screen time again, sport.
Yeah.
Isn't that what pissed you off the first time around?
Pissed him off that he was always stealing the scenes, and he's like, well, I am the captain.
Show's about me.
Exactly.
No, William. Bill, if you will. Show's about the ship.
It was.
It's true.
Yep. Show's about the ship. That's the reason why the new ship was so startling, even though it was beautiful in the J.J. Abrams movies. Mm-hmm. It's like, you fucked with the ship. It looks good, but that's not my ship.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's it. Hashtag not my Enterprise. We have a second article that I'm not going to read because it's an opinion piece, and I don't like reading people's words like that. But basically, it's a long put together on the future of the Star Trek franchise, how Paramount is desperate to get another feature film out into theaters. And in the meantime, Kurtzman and the gang at Paramount Plus are doing everything they can to give us what we, the fans, want without too much fan service, to be honest, which I like.
Right.
You know? So it's worth popping over to thecomicbookpodcast.com and reading this article. It's got a lot of cool shit in here. So
yeah, all I have to say to Kurtzman, well, I know that Kurtzman's aware of this because we've screamed it since the end of Picard season 3. But I can say, if you see Strange New Worlds as a success because it's built off of the original series, right? It's a prequel to the original series, yet at the same time, it's because of the popularity of the original Captain Kirk series that Strange New Worlds is working. Plus, it's so well written, so well acted, they're willing to take huge risks and do crazy shit like a full musical episode and just have fun with it. There's an even bigger fan base of millennials that would love to see Star Trek Legacy involving the next-gen characters that we have left. And if you did that, you'd have two very successful shows running at the same time. That's all I'm saying.
I'd be
very successful. It wouldn't be, you wouldn't have the dips that you've had with Discovery. I understand what happened with Discovery. And you wouldn't have as much as if you play to the fan service. That's all. What movies did the best? The ones that played to the fan service.
Billionaire and activist investor Nelson Peltz, who's campaigning for two Disney board seats, is calling Kevin Feige's track record with the MCU into question. Per the Financial Times, Peltz has openly criticized the company and Marvel Studios head Kevin Feige in a new interview. Peltz, who holds a stake of around $3.5 billion, has attributed the declining success of Disney's Marvel movies to the, quote, woke, end quote, strategy used for casting their characters. He suggested that the MCU has been putting out too many losers in recent years, which might mean that it's time for a change in leadership. Quote from Peltz. They say we know nothing about the movie business. We don't claim we do, but I do think they do. With five big losers in a row, they've lost first place in animation. They've lost first place in features. Maybe it's time to change management in those divisions. I don't know. The guy's made $30 billion. $30 billion for Disney.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's not a sneeze. You know? They have yet to make a movie that didn't make its money back, right?
Right.
Okay. Sony, on the other hand, those guys could fuck up a feature.
Yep. Warner Brothers.
Absolutely. You know? I think Feige's doing fine.
Feige's doing great.
Yeah.
Well, Peltz lives up to his name.
The Marvels would have made more money had they not carried the goddamn actor strike as long as they did. So that those three ladies could have gone out and promoted their stuff.
Should have delayed it again. I hate to say it.
Yeah, it should have been delayed like Black... Not as bad as Black Widow, but that kind of idea. We'll push it back until the strike is over.
Right, but Peltz's next quote sums up his entire viewpoint of the whole thing.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Keep going. You have the voice for this.
I want you to do it.
You want me to do it?
Let's see. I'm not ready to say that, but I question his record. People go to a movie or show to be entertained. They don't go to get a message. Why do I have a Marvel? Why do I have to have a Marvel that's all women? Not that I have anything against women, but why do I have to do that? Why can't I have Marvels that are both? Why do I need an all-black cast? He was talking about fucking Wakanda Forever.
Yeah. Oh, no! Oh, wait, why am I not represented as a cis white male?
As a cis white wealthy
male.
I'm
done. Yeah. I'll stop talking now. Sorry.
I don't know why. I gave you like explicit begging permission
to
talk.
But it makes me so mad. And it sums it up. This will sum it up for you guys. I bought myself a magnet to hang on my fridge. And it says, I cannot believe my daughter is fighting for the same rights my mother started fighting for.
Right?
I am so done with the blame being placed on the cast for a movie failing or not doing as well as projected. Because I don't think those movies failed. They made back their money then some. Mm-hmm. The Marvels had no promotion. Wakanda was... amazing. I don't remember
Wakanda made a lot of money.
Yeah.
Wakanda made a lot of money, and I didn't think it was as strong a movie, but at the same time I understood why they made the movie the way they made it. And it made a lot of money. It did not fail at the box office.
Well, and
she made a lot of money and did not fail at the box office. Yeah.
Like Wakanda Forever, given the fact that T'Challa, you know, Chadwick Boseman up and died on us.
Yep.
I thought they handled that really well. What a great tribute to him as an actor, to his character, to that iconic role, but also a great way to fix it in the universe, to move forward.
So here's the question. Here's my answer to Mr. Peltz. Why do you have to have a Marvel that's all women? Because women have money, and they will go and they will spend it to see your movie. Why do I need an all black cast? Because that's a whole market that you aren't currently utilizing and exploiting to get money from. They will pay you money, dummy. All money is green. All you should care about is will this bring in the green? Don't think. And if you're thinking, oh, women and black people don't have money, well, that's sexist and racist. But the fact is they will bring in the money. They will do it. The Asian community came out in droves to watch Shang-Chi. Yes, this is going to make you money, dummy. You're supposed to be the wealthy guy all about the money. Go get the money. And guess what? I'm going to see all these fucking movies because I think they're fucking great.
In spite of you, Peltz.
In spite of Peltz, exactly.
So Ghostbusters Frozen Empire has a dubious record it set.
Yep.
With a score of 44% at Rotten Tomatoes. This sets the new record for the movie series as the lowest score than every other previous installment of the franchise. The record, the previous record holder was Ghostbusters 2, which holds a score of 55%. Each other movie has a fresh score, including the original at 95, the 2016 reboot at 74, and Afterlife at 64. So, there you go.
I don't know. I guess I don't understand what people expect out of their movies.
I'll tell you what. The John Mendelsohn has a quote at the end of the article that I think kind of encapsulates it and honestly gives a criticism that doesn't take away my desire to still see the movie.
Right.
And he says, there isn't anything exceptionally terrible about Frozen Empire, but there isn't anything to write home about either. It's a family-friendly viewing experience that can be forgotten about in an hour, which is massively disappointing for an installment from such a substantial film series. I can go with that. I'm fine with that.
I can actually say that for both Frozen Empire and for Afterlife. They're both very good movies. They're very good movies. But am I remembering gags like I do from the original Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2016?
It's true. This man has no dick.
Yeah. He's back.
Walter Peck
is back in Frozen Empire. I'll give you a little minor spoiler. He's the mayor of New York now.
Oh.
And every time he showed up on screen, I'm like, there's Mr. Pecker.
No, but like, seriously, I don't need every single movie I go see to be this like substantial piece of cinematic greatness. I need to go watch my popcorn movie that is an hour long and lets me forget about my world for an hour. A movie has to be real, real bad. I'm looking at The Flash right now.
Yeah.
For me to be super unhappy with it. Real bad. I mean, now I've always had an issue with Bats v. Supes. I don't know why. I literally cannot explain it, but that movie bothers me on levels that just bother me. And I recognize I'm the outlier.
No, you're not.
Well, but you know what I mean? Like, I don't need every new Ghostbusters movie to be the best Ghostbusters movie. I don't need every Marvel movie to be the best Marvel movie. I need them to entertain me and let me forget about my world.
I just want it to be the best that it can be.
I want it. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
And I'm like, you know, what it is, like, watch Ghostbusters Afterlife and then go watch Frozen Empire. And it's like, it's exactly what you want it to be. It's the continuation of the story of this family. Of Egon Spengler's family and where it's taken to. And I just like it. I love it. I love the idea of it. I love the whole thing. The movies are much more emotional than, say, Ghostbusters or Ghostbusters 2016. Much more emotional. Much more feeling. And I love that about it. So I don't have a problem with them. And if they want to continue this as an ongoing piece, I would love it. And yeah, Dan Aykroyd, I know it didn't make enough money, but man, I would love 2016 to come back with another movie. Yes.
Same. The Batman Part 2 has assembled its cast and fans face a lengthy wait for this sequel to hit theaters. At least we have the Penguin in the middle. Mm-hmm. According to notable insider Jeff Snyder, Part 2 will begin principal photography in April of 2025. That allows director Matt Reeves and his creative team over a year to finalize scripts, ramp up casting, etc. No official casting announcements for Part 2 are expected to be made before fall of 2024.
Allows Glasgow to brace itself for another Batman. Because they did two in a row, basically. They did Batman and then Batgirl, which they then, you know,
scrapped.
Deleted.
And?
Yeah, they scrapped it, but they filmed both of those in Glasgow, so yeah.
Ever since
goes back.
Star Wars A New Hope, when we saw Aunt Beru serve Luke blue milk on the moisture farm, everybody's kind of wondered, I wonder what that tastes like.
Ever since we watched Luke take some right out of the teat.
Yeah.
I mean, I can honestly say I haven't wondered that, but go on.
That was green milk.
Yeah, that was green.
In 2019, Disneyland and Disney World opened Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. They sold the blue milk.
Mm-hmm.
So you could spend $300 to get a half day ticket to a fucking Disney park and go drink your gross blue milk.
Yes.
It turns out blue milk, they say, is pretty yummy. Now the rest of us Earthlings, not near a Disney theme park, will get to taste blue milk straight from the grocery store and not from the planet Batuu, with Star Wars True Moo Blue Milk.
I can't wait to pour this on my C-3POs.
Boy, that's a throwback.
Yeah.
Is it just milk with blue in it? Does it taste like raspberries?
It's vanilla, flavored.
Oh.
Later in the article flavored? It says.
Vanilla
flavored. Yeah, vanilla flavored milk. You know, you could just do that at home with a dash of vanilla and a few drops of food coloring, friends.
Yeah, but that won't make your kids scream when they're like, I want blue milk. And you say, we got blue milk at home.
My oat milk, which is what I drink because I'm allergic to
bougie.
It's also, I drink it because it's bougie, yes. No, but they do one in vanilla as well. So I'm like, I could get that and put a couple of drops of blue.
There you go.
Yeah.
Blue food coloring.
And then it's blue milk that I can handle without getting all the clump.
That was more info than we needed, friend.
Yeah. That's it for the news.
Take another break so Joss can, go throw up. And when we come back, we're talking comics.
Phlegm.
My name is Peter Davison. I played the Fifth Doctor, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. Jackie Robinson waited 20 months to play his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you're listening to me on the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Wah, wah, wah!
Been a little bit of a busy week in the comic book world. Let's have some comic book news.
Comic book news it is.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice,
Marvel has announced a Daredevil 60th anniversary issue. I don't know if this goes the way of their Pride issue. It'll be all about Batman. I'm so mad at Marvel.
It's the next issue in the run. It's not like,
mm-hmm.
like they've timed it. If what they think is going to happen happens, they've timed it well to be conveniently the 60th anniversary issue.
Yeah.
But it's not like they're doing a special issue. It's the next one in the run. I'm sure that they've had this storyline planned out and ready mm-hmm. to go, you know?
Yeah. So, anyway, that's coming.
Yep.
Daredevil 8 will be the 60th anniversary issue of Daredevil.
There you go.
I hope they do something nice.
We'll have a conversation about an anniversary issue here in a little bit when I get to reviews. But it's not in the roundup, but you brought it up. I want to talk a minute about Marvel's Pride Month plans. Or lack thereof.
I phoned it in.
Oh my god!
I did. Dude, I'm sorry. We took a week off. We haven't talked about this.
We haven't.
I don't even know
what you're talking about. Let's hear it. Yeah.
Oh boy! Prepare for disappointment.
Yeah. I'm always prepared for disappointment.
Get your angry pants on.
Oh, they're already on. Have you not? Didn't you hear me earlier? Mm-hmm. Jeez, Louise. Oh, no. Oh, no. I just found a headline. Are you really? We're celebrating the Allies?
Yes.
We're going to. We're okay.
But I mean, more to quote, this is what Jeff threw up, to quote, Marvel Comics will be celebrating Pride Month this year by looking beyond those of us in the LGBTQIA plus community and focusing on those who support them, the allies. As revealed, whoever wrote that, if they are actually LGBTQIA plus, they were writing that with the gritted teeth.
Chef's kiss.
Oh, absolutely.
As revealed in Marvel Comics' June 2024 solicitations, the publisher will be doing a series of 8 variant covers under the theme of Pride Allies. These 8 covers will be on Marvel's top books, including X-Men, Amazing Spider-Man, and Captain America, and will be drawn by 2 artists, Betsy Cola and Davy Go.
Isn't it about time that white people got credit for being so damn supportive?
Exactly.
Yeah. I constantly feel underrepresented.
I'm underrepresented.
Yeah. I don't. What am I going to do
here? Where's my representation? David Peltz and me, where's my representation? This is in addition to its annual Marvel's Voices Pride Anthology, which this year is being published May 29th as X-Men Wedding Special number 1.
Who's so getting married?
Mystique and Destiny.
Okay.
Yeah.
In
history had been married before, because Mystique just morphed into a man so they could get married, a male body so they could get married. But this is an actual, we'll celebrate them both being women being married. Yeah.
Super. And the whole crowd will be very anxious and supportive allies.
Yep.
waiting for the goddamn, I don't know, the reception food.
Well, they said basically it's reading the solicitation for that one, for the X-Men wedding special. And they said, oh, it's going to be like in the theme of all Marvel weddings, you know, just like Fantastic Four or the previous X-Men wedding special. I'm like, oh, so all kinds of people are going to crash the wedding and shenanigans are going to happen. And then the happy couple will be lucky to say I do, basically. Yeah. Like all superhero weddings.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Uncle Scrooge is entering the multiverse in a new one-shot from Marvel written by Jason Aaron.
We're all in.
Called Uncle Scrooge and the Infinity Dime.
Okay, I'm in.
Yeah. I mean, there's a long fucking article in here about this, including the word-for-word, mostly the word-for-word printing of the press release.
The solicitation. Yeah.
Yeah. But quoting Jason Aaron, he says, as far as I'm concerned, there's no disputing the fact that Uncle Scrooge is one of the absolute greatest characters in the history of comics.
Hey!
I don't mean just comics that feature talking animals. I mean all comics ever, bar none, said Jason Aaron. Uncle Scrooge's rich, action-packed history includes some of the most exciting adventure comics ever created by legendary creators like Carl Barks, Don Rosa. It's one of the most mind-staggering thrills of my career to get to craft this epic cosmic adventure for the world's richest duck, one that looks to honor the character's legendary history while taking him to some wild, new, unexplored places that only Marvel can deliver. I mean, I'll read it.
I'm actually kind of looking forward to it.
He's very enthusiastic. I love it. I'm excited.
I feel like he's channeling his inner Chip Zdarsky with that enthusiasm, but I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, Chip Zdarsky was pretty peppy about Howard the Duck.
Yeah.
This feels like that. And Howard the Duck worked out well.
If Zdarsky had written that particular thing that Aaron wrote, we'd be like, oh, God. You're taking it all with a grain of salt kind of thing, enjoying the parody. But this, we're like, he does sound enthusiastic.
Stephen Curry, to kick off new sports superheroes graphic novel series. Here's the deal. I don't care for basketball. Mm-hmm. I find it I find it tedious to watch. I've never been a very good player, so that's probably another. I mean, I was when I was a kid, but then that disappeared when puberty made me awkward as fuck. But yeah, so, but I like Stephen Curry a lot. I see videos of him and the way he behaves with fans, the way he behaves with special needs kids, the way he behaves with kids in general, and just what a nice guy he seems like. I'd hate to wonder what the skeletons in his closet are, because he just seems too good to be true. But, you know, I like him. I support it. And I will, when we get copies of this in, push this on to kids.
Yeah.
You know, as a colored paper retailer, you know, I'll support Stephen Curry on this. You bet. Because why not? And it looks like it's got robot ninjas. So there we go.
There you go.
Yeah.
Let's have some fun with it.
Yep. So anyway, there he is. Stephen Curry, star of a comic book.
Mm-hmm.
That he didn't write. Good for you, sport. Garth Ennis is breaking down his Kickstarter exclusives for a new Marjorie Finnegan temporal criminal, an expanded director's cut. So they're.
I may or may not have already backed this book. Kickstarter.
You know, there. When the famous guys put their shit on Kickstarter and you support it, all you're doing is egging them on.
I know. It doesn't help, but.
Yeah. But, you can pop over to thecomicbookpodcast.com and you can click on this and you can go through the interview where he talks about all the cool Kickstarter shit. You know? So, cheers for the... I got a dog out barking.
His incentives are interesting because he's doing them immediately. Like... If they hit a certain goal, he suddenly does something during the Kickstarter, which is rare to see. Like they'll do online interviews and stuff that only certain people get to watch. And like if you upgrade your backing to the next tier, we'll let you do this with us, where it was like an online, you know, Zoom call or something. And I was like, wow, that's really, I mean, you got to have the celebrity to do that, but that's really cool. You know, I don't think many could do that. I know Keanu Reeves could have pulled that off, but they didn't do that for Berserker, but then they made their money in a day and then turned around and made $1 million off of it. But like Brandon Sanderson could do it easily. Not that he had any problem making any money on Kickstarter either. So, yeah. Yeah.
I'm looking something up. There's a new Berserker title coming out with a new writer. And it's not Keanu Reeves and it's not Matt Kent. And I cannot suddenly... Face Full of Bullets. Here we go. Face Full of Bullets is written by... Having new writers and artists explore the history. Yeah, this is boring. Sorry.
Yep.
Hard to read. Oh, yeah, sorry. Here's why I came up. It's fucking Jason Aaron. Jason Aaron's writing the new Berserker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited for it.
Yeah, I am too. God damn it. So, yeah, it's just created... by Keanu Reeves. And now Jason Aaron's going to take a turn. So that'll be Berserker, A Face Full of Bullets, coming out later this year, as I recall.
Nice.
Yeah.
I ordered the... I backed Doug on his Kickstarter it was a couple years ago, actually. But I backed him, and one of the things I upscaled to was getting this special edition hardcover of Plastic.
Oh, nice.
It doesn't fit on my shelf. It's gigantic. It doesn't fit on my bookshelf. It's so freaking... It's tall and huge and gorgeous. You can open it up and... I mean, just gorgeous. But at the same time, I'm like, dude, think about your reader, man. I got to store this thing. So I've had to lay it flat on top of the other books because it just doesn't fit on my bookshelf.
Yeah. Yeah. But cool. Very cool. Anyway, that's it for the news.
Well, let's talk about what we've been reading this last week, Jess.
I took the time to catch up on the current Wonder Woman comic series. And it's a Wonder Woman comic. It's really, really good. They've banned the Amazons. And I'm trying to recall what happens in the last issue that I read. It sounds like you're current on it, JC. And you have a much better comic memory than I do.
Tom King.
He's killing it, though. I'm loving it.
He's flat out murdering it. He's got a catchphrase for Wonder Woman that is just amazing. It's no thank you.
Oh, yeah. And yes. Yes.
The army is attacking her and they say, surrender now. And all she says is no thank you. Mm-hmm. And then all hell breaks loose. And she just basically wipes out an army, an entire division of the U.S. Army. It's just a really cool concept. And there's apparently a King of America that he's created, which is really an interesting idea. So, the last issue was, it's actually gotten kind of, people have been a little irritated by it because they took a break. Diana went to space to hang out with Clark to pick out a gift for Batman.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I haven't read that one yet.
It pulls you away from the story. The issue prior to that, though, holy shit.
Yes.
With the three Wonder Girls, and it's basically all of them, you know, she's basically making them challenge her so they won't help her. And then in the end, they're like, yeah, we don't care.
We're doing it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. It's been so good. And her no thank yous are so, like, you can hear the power behind that no thank you.
He picks the perfect time to give a no thank you. And even when she does it in that little one-off where they go shopping on an alien world, she does a no thank you. And I was like, oh, be careful, Clark. Shit usually gets broken when she says no thank you. So, it was really good. It's a really good one. I love that series.
It's been really good. And so I'm excited to keep reading it. And
I get them, I read them, I hand them to Michelle to read and keep, because I want her to read them. Because I'm like, Tom King is one of the best writers working in comics right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is what I caught up on, though, is Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. How about you, Jeff? What did you get read this week?
I read Feral, and I know I've talked about it before, this is the first in a new series from Tony Fleeks. Tony Rodriguez and Trish Forstner. If you read Stray Dogs a couple years back and liked it, you're going to like this a lot. Mm-hmm. Stray Dogs was the story of a serial killer who steals the dogs of his victims as trophies. Mm. The dogs figure out what's going on and plan revenge. That's all I'm going to give you. But it's done in this beautiful Disney-esque sort of My Little Ponies theme, and yet it's very violent and adult, and so the two mix very well together. Feral's about the same. It's basically cats versus zombies.
Nice.
In a way.
Yeah, some cats get picked up. Something happens, and suddenly they are in terrible danger. That first issue came out this week. I flipped through it again to refresh my memory for today's show.
Yep.
I recommend it. I got copies, too. We sold through our first batch, but we had some spares, so those are all out on the shelf down at Dr. Volts. You should pop into Dr. Volts, 2043 East, 3300 South, Monday through Sunday. We're open, and you can get a copy of Feral to get started on this wonderful series by three of the nicest fucking comic creators in the world.
You know,
everybody but Trish made it out to Wasatch Comic Con this year, and Trish didn't make it because she had COVID.
That's right.
Right.
So, yeah, Tony, and Trish.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Fucking knocking it out of the park again.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's pretty good. So that's what I managed to put away this week. What about you?
So I also read Feral, issue one, on your recommendation solely. And, you know, I'm a cat person. I'm a cat dad. I like kitty cats. And so what I'm getting from the first page and we're just going to cover the first couple of pages here. Get from the first page. There is a super virulent rabies outbreak. And all of these animals have been picked up from their owners. These cats have been picked up from their owners because it seems to be affecting the feline community. But it seems to be affecting all animals, to be honest. It's a super virulent rabies outbreak. And they've been picked up by their owners. And they're being taken somewhere, maybe to get quarantined and vaccinated so they're protected. But in the end, it's these three cats kind of on their own. They're three house cats, one male, two females. And they basically fit the personalities of cats. So you've got the one that is the mothering cat, the one that is the I don't give a shit cat about anything but myself cat. And then there is the male who is a I'm going to explore everything super fast all the time. And yeah, this is cool. This is just a cool issue. I just really liked it. Yeah, I'll probably buy some more.
Nice.
I do like Animal Pound a little better, but I like this one a lot. But then Animal Pound is Tom King. So of course I'm going to like that a little better. New Burn number 16, the end of Chip Zdarsky's crime noir, series. Really satisfying. This ending was really satisfying. What I like about this is that there was an ongoing thread of the story, and yet every issue was kind of like he'd solve a case every single issue. So for the first 13, 14 issues, he's just every issue is him solving a case. But there's a thread running through the whole thing that by the time you get to 14, 15, and 16, that's sort of the end of season kind of explosion.
Okay.
I don't know if he'll come back with more, but I would not object. I really liked it. I liked the idea of New Burn. Finally, we come to Miles Morales Spider-Man number 18, Legacy number 300, the 300th issue of Miles Morales. Dear Cody Ziegler. And I don't know who the editor is because I'm not going to open up the book again. But you guys should know that these anniversary issues should end the story, right? Not be the middle of the fucking story. Oh, my God. Big old, you know, double-sized cover-to-cover action, you know, cover-to-cover story. And you don't end the fucking story. Every anniversary, every 100th, you know, 100th issue of Spider-Man, the, you know, Amazing Spider-Man is usually the end of the story and the bridge to the next story. And that's what I was expecting. And instead I get, and we're going to continue next month. Really? This was supposed to end it. That's my biggest complaint. My biggest compliment is there was only one panel that, what's his name? Vincenti. Did that I didn't know what the fuck I was looking at. Everything else, nice and clear. So clearly, Vincenti's been getting my notes. That's all. Because my biggest complaint with Miles Morales has been, I hate the Cape Killers. So this was supposed to be the issue that ended the Cape Killer thing.
Mm-hmm.
No. It's got one more issue. Maybe more. And then it was supposed to end. And then I've been complaining that I don't know what the fuck I'm looking at in some of these panels. It's just a blurry image, like intentionally, like digitally got like some blurs and stuff and I, like it's glitched or something. And I think he's doing that as kind of a thing for this one character. But at the same time, I don't know what the fuck I'm looking at. Cause all I see is like just a shape and something. And it's supposed to be this action moment, but I don't know what the fuck I'm looking at. It's like, Bourne, which one was it? The second movie, Bourne Supremacy?
Yes.
Where all the action scenes are like right up against them, so you don't know what the hell's going on. Because all you see is just blurry bodies moving and that's it. Yeah, that's what this is like, reading these comics. So this panel work. So I'm glad Vincenti's getting my notes and is making some changes now. That's all I'm saying.
I'm glad for you.
But that's it. So today is Tuesday. That means tomorrow is Wednesday. It's time to give our picks of the week. week.
You only say hello so you can say goodbye. These two words must make your life complete. You pick out the hearts that break to make your ego high. And I was just your pick of the week.
All right, Joss, start us out.
We will start out with our mainstream picks. I've got two that are both from Marvel because I'm that way. One is a compendium. It's a Marvel Volume 7, The Concrete Jungle Epic Collection. This is going back to Daredevil number 133 to 154. So this is early, early, early Daredevil, written by Marv Wolfman. If you've never picked these up to read them, they are fantastic. They're a great way to start Daredevil, just for a fun jumping in point. And then I'm going to, because I've been trying to do better, I've organized all my stacks. I'm going to dedicate this week to catching up to the Sensational She-Hulk so that I can go pick up the Sensational She-Hulk number 7. Because I read the synopsis and went, I don't know that I've read the last several. So that's my goal this week, is to read She-Hulk so I can pick up the new one and be on top of it. What about you, Jeff? What is your mainstream pick of the week?
Marvel Immortal Thor number 9. This one's, we're fighting the Enchantress. It's got a couple, I don't know how to explain it. We've got Blood Hunt coming. So they're starting to theme some of the variant covers, and one of them, two of them are really, really cool, like zombie looking badass covers that I want. I don't think we're getting them, but I want them. Sergio Davila just fucking delivers on the one that I picked. So yeah, we just still more of that, more of the same fights, stuff like that, which I've been enjoying. The other one is the Unstoppable Doom Patrol finally coming out in trade. It's going to run to about $17 because it's not Marvel. That'll be Doom Patrol. Unstoppable Doom Patrol. Yeah, I know you read it.
I read the individual issues. It's pretty good. Did I like it as much as the last run of Doom Patrol by, what's his name from My Chemical Romance? No, but I did like it a lot. I still enjoyed the hell out of it. So, yeah.
Fair.
So, you, sir.
So my picks this week, from the mainstream, we have Deadpool number 1 coming out. Cody Ziegler, the guy who doesn't know what an anniversary issue is supposed to do, is going to be writing this one, but, you know, it's the return of Wade, apparently, who's never really gone away. But yeah, it's basically a new art team, new writer and artist team. All work and no play makes Deadpool a very dead boy. That's all there is to it. So looking forward to maybe picking up a Deadpool again. And then from DC Comics, Nicole Maines, whom I've talked about endlessly on this show, who is currently writing a Suicide Squad adventure featuring Dreamer, her character from Supergirl, the series Supergirl, the television series Supergirl, that is. She's written also a new graphic novel called Bad Dream, A Dreamer's Story. This is kind of, one of their YA novels, but it's a graphic novel. So I'm curious how this is going to be, and it's kind of the origin from Nicole Maine's point of view of how Dreamer became Dreamer. So we had what was written by the writer team for the Supergirl television series, where Nicole Maine was cast in the role. But, you know, when you're an actor and you're playing a part, you actually kind of create kind of backstories in your head. And I'm thinking that's what Nicole Maine's going to bring out a little bit, which I'm really excited to read. So, yes, Nicole Maine's Bad Dream, A Dreamer's Story, coming out next week. from DC, and I believe I checked that on Lunar, and yes, I think it is still coming out. So you always got to check the Lunar. I'll skip my pick from Image because Jeff also grabbed that one, and touch on from Dark Horse, Minor Threats. This is Patton Oswalt's comic book about superheroes who have shit powers. And when you have shit powers, guess what? The bad guy wins. And in this one, Minor Threats, The Fastest Way Down, number one. This is the costume criminal Playtime has won. Twilight City's greatest hero, the Insomniac, and its greatest villain, the Stickman, are dead, allowing Frankie to unify the super crook underworld and assert herself as the queenpin of Redport. But Frankie is feeling the pressure from every side. Rival gangs are challenging her authority. Scalpel, her consigliere, is pushing her to legitimize her empire. And the act of murdering the Insomniac has broken something deep inside her. Frankie is about to learn the hard way. Heavy is the head that wears the supervillain crown. So, yeah, it's Richard III with superheroes. I dig that.
Nice.
How about you, Jeff? What's your... indie pick.
I'm going for from Dark Horse, Mignola book. Mm-hmm. Called Sir Edward Grey Witchfinder, Volume 1. I haven't read any of these, but I got a couple of dudes that have and fucking love it. It's a little fella, but for some reason, you know, it's $30. But yeah. it collects Sir Edward Grey Witchfinder Volumes 1, 2, and 3.
There you go.
So, and then it's got some other cool shit in there, too. And then, yeah, Geiger, number one. I picked because you picked. I thought you'd dick it. So,
oh, okay.
But, yeah, this if is, you guys, it was a limited series, and now it's going to ongoing.
Yep. This is Geoff Johns' sort of soldier verse. I want to say Junkyard Joe, which was a decent comic. I enjoyed Junkyard Joe. He's got the Red Coat and Red Coat and Geiger both coming out this week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's part of their Ghost Machine team.
Mm-hmm.
Ghost Machine team. So we're seeing new stuff. But yeah, it's, I don't know. I'm really enjoying what Image is doing right now with a lot of their different weird-ass properties. And I liked Geiger the first time around, so I think I'll probably like it this time, too. But, you know, with all that said, what about you, Jocelyn?
I'm also going with an Image comic pick, which is Crave number 5, because I also got caught up on that series, and it's the app that's giving everybody exactly what they want, sometimes with bad consequences. And so they're going to figure out if they can stop it before it's all too late or not. But it's been weird and lovely and delightful. So I'm excited to pick it up.
Awesome.
And that's it for my picks of the week.
Well, then let's jump into our TARDIS and head to June to give our picks of the future. All right, Joss, what are you picking up off the shelf in June?
Well, again, we're going to talk Image Comics, because apparently that's what I read now, is Marvel and Image. From Jerry Duggan, I'm going to pick up Falling in Love on the Path to Hell, number one. The sun set on samurai and gunslingers at roughly the same time, but our two leads didn't die off quietly. In the east, Asami, an Onimusha warrior and female samurai, would rather die with her weapons than surrender them to a sword hunt. In the West, the gunslinger McWraith follows his revenge to the bitter end and pays the ultimate price. The future lovers are mortally wounded, a world apart, and awake together in a purgatory ruled by a ruthless society of damned warriors. This one has it all. Action, the dead, the dying, the undead, and of course, romance.
Aw.
Aw. No, the covers are beautiful. That story sounds super intriguing. So I'm going to throw it into my hold. How about you, Jeff?
I'm going to go with a Boom Studios book called Profane Number One. Discover a new mind-bending thriller from the legendary writer Peter Milligan from Hellblazer and Shade the Changing Man. Veteran artist Raul Fernandez from Detective Comics, Justice League Dark, about the precariously thin line between reality and fiction. Perfect for fans of Bang and New Burn.
Mm-hmm.
What do you got?
My pick is right off the Marvel shelf. X-Men number 35, which is the Legacy 700th issue of X-Men. 700th issue. Written by Jerry Duggan, Karen Gillan, Al Ewing, Chris Claremont, Jed McKay, and Gil Simone.
Jesus.
Yeah. All good things must come to an end, and as a good thing, and as good of a thing as the Krakoan era has been for mutant kind, its time has come at last. Thank God. the tragedy and triumph of the fall of House of X, the madness and mystery of the rise of the powers of X, they've all come to their end and led to this moment that will change the future of mutant kind for years to come. Written and drawn by an all-star cast of writers and artists who have shaped the Krakoan Age, this is one milestone no X-Fan will want to miss. Also featuring, this is the hook for me, A Story of Family by X-Men master Chris Claremont and a glimpse of things to come. So I got the hook. I'm like, yes, the Chris Claremont. Yes, yes, I'll do that. Yeah, this looks really good. And this will have a Pride Allies variant cover as well.
Oh, good.
Which, you can collect these all in June from Marvel. Well, I guess that's it for us this week, kids. Anything else?
Nothing.
Same stuff as usual. You guys can help us out as we move into the next phase of evolution for your favorite podcast network. Pop over to thecomicbookpodcast.com. Click on that fundraiser there. Give us a little help out. Every 5, 10, 20 bucks helps. The more we raise, the cooler shit I can do. If we manage to make it to the target, then great. We're opening an office. If we don't, I promise you things are still going to change, and they're going to change for the better. You're going to have more shows, and you're going to have more ways to listen and / watch. So I have paid for a couple pieces of software I'll need regardless. I'm testing those out this week. Nothing that you guys will see listener forward facing. Already things are changing. I'm already taking steps. And I hope that you'll join us on this spectacular journey. With that said, I turn the time over to Brother Carter, who has this message about Patreon.
That's right. You need to join us this week on Patreon. Patreon.com/defendmedia, where all the cool kids hang out with us in our Patreon squad that we want to make a Patreon platoon and eventually a Patreon division that would just get defeated by Wonder Woman if she said no thank you.
Hell yeah.
This week we're gonna make it light. We're gonna talk about 10 successful SNL alumni the fans won't ever forget. I guarantee one of them might surprise you if you're not really that familiar with Saturday Night Live. If you're not familiar with all the eras of Saturday Night Live, one of them you'll be like, what? They were on Saturday Night Live? Yep. So we'll be talking about that here in Patreon. Patreon.com/GFanMedia. In the meantime, I will say, as I always do, until another issue isn't the end of a story arc, make mine Marvel.
For Hell's Kitchen.
For Stan.
For Asgard.